Were any of your formative crushes cartoon characters? Are any of your current crushes cartoon characters? Listen, it's fine. Me too. I'm comedy writer and 41-year-old child Gabby Hutchinson Crouch, and I say sometimes cartoons are just sexy. I don't know why, but I intend to find out with the help of some funny guests who are here for a chat about the animated characters that make their hearts pop out of their chests and their tongues roll out onto the table. Will we find out something about early crushes, pop culture and sexuality, or will we just wax lyrical about well-rendered tits? Whatever we do, I hope it'll help you rest assured that that fantasy you have about being dominated by Ursula the Sea Witch is absolutely fine. Welcome to Curiously Drawn.
Love this so much.
With me this episode is a BBC New Comedy Award nominated stand-up comedian and non-BBC Award nominated pole dancer, but only because there isn't a BBC Award for pole dancing. She and I spent a day of lockdown recording an ultimately doomed BBC Sounds show while I sat under my desk and she was in a blanket fort in a Belgian basement. It's Shan Doxey. Hello.
Hello, Gabby.
Hello, Shan.
It's really nice to talk to you, not from the void. Like, oh my God. I mean, we were just talking about it, but wow. A dark time has been had. It's nice to have surfaced. I don't want to be sycophantic, but your pillow fort skills are honestly unparalleled. I need the people to know this.
So I'm not using a pillow fort for this podcast because I don't have BBC executives breathing down my neck and ultimately deciding they don't like me anyway. But I used sofa cushions. I removed all the cushions from the sofa.
Oh yeah, and you've got all the gear.
Yeah, it was less of a pillow fort, more of like a pillow bungalow. it was quite large. I tried to fully upholster the inside of a desk.
Pillow semi-detached. This is the millennial dream, isn't it? I wanted to tell you, like, I am very seriously putting in an application to be a geriatric Gen Z because I just can't deal with the millennial doom anymore. It's too depressing. I mean, honestly, the pillow fort being the peak of aspiration is just too bleak. Kathy, I can't deal.
Listen, it's difficult. It's difficult even if you're on the cusp. I'm on the cusp of being a millennial. I call our generation the generation for people who were born within original Star Wars movies that sometimes get called Xennials. They sometimes get called Generation Y. I call us Generation Dial-Up because we were there right for the start of the almost analog internet.
Oh my God, yeah. Like, you know that Winnie, PPPOE sound? Listen, I want to get in with you guys. Why am I so intent on abandoning my like specific slice of time? But honestly, if that comes on in a club, that is a banger.
It's the song of our people. That's why. It's the song. It's after 6 o'clock. It's cheaper. Time to unplug the telephone and phone up the internet.
To send one AOL message you've been drafting for 2 weeks.
Yes. Well, with me, it was to download another chapter of erotic fan fiction. Literally, I've been using it for filth right from the start. Anyway. Right, so we're going to talk about your three cartoon crushes. We've got a really nice mix here. We've got with the people I've interviewed so far, we've had one person who's all like all chimera, all animal people. Another one who just went like all humans, just humans all the way. But it was like a plethora of international humans. It was quite like a nice global mix. With you, there's I can't see anything that's joining them apart from horniness. So I'm just going to go straight ahead with your first one.
Yeah.
Right, so first of all is the guy who keeps his head while all around are spinning, flying or dropping their rings. He's collected and tough in a needlessly manic world. He floats like a butterfly and punches through walls. He's everyone's favourite red antagonist turned ally monotreme. It's Knuckles, the echidna from Sonic.
Yeah, it's Bay. Hello, Knuckles. It was so funny. When I got your message about this podcast, Knuckles was the one who immediately appeared of like, God, that was a lot of like mental horny energy when I was younger. Like, how does this make sense? But it's funny what you were saying about, the kind of gender / animal things. I think that if Knuckles had been written now, probably they would have been framed as maybe kind of genderqueer. Not that you can't be a cisgender male echidna and have all those character attributes, but I think there's definitely a bit more gender fluidity about Knuckles. I don't know, maybe I'm projecting that, but just Knuckles is great. I mean, I told you from the offset, this is going to be such a bisexual conversation. That's, it's going to be aggressively bi. Yeah. So I was obsessed with Sonic the Hedgehog as a kid. It's because like my parents didn't really like us playing video games, but they conceded to Sonic as like the only one. So I grew up with a friend called Will who, so we both subscribed to Sonic the comic, and my first moment of like palpable jealous rage was when he got a cartoon submitted into Sonic the comic, and I was like, wow. You're famous, oh my god, how have you done it? I just felt like Knuckles was this like dreamy, misunderstood, like not lone wolf, that's a bit kind of grim, but sort of just this kind of really intriguing, enigmatic figure who just kind of needs someone to turn up on that flying crystal and love him. Also, and I'm sorry, we're not even like 10 minutes into the podcast, but fisting with Knuckles. I mean, definitely a kink. Wasn't quite aware, but probably that did feature a little bit. He is very much, I think, a kind of moody, emo, like some kind of like art film podcast bro. Like, that's kind of how I see him. Just sort of like definitely listens to Placebo. Knuckles is a Placebo fan. There's no doubt about it. I feel like the soul of Brian Molko exists in Knuckles the Echidna. Yeah, I don't know. I just genuinely felt like I'm the one, you know, we can live on your little mountain. You can do your crystals collecting. And I'll, don't know, I'll just kind of, I will love you into a fine paste was my feeling about Knuckles.
So there's been so many different iterations of the Sonic lore. With all the different games and the different sort of almost sort of reboots and been loads of different cartoons of it. So has his character changed at all? Because he starts off as an antagonist, doesn't he, in the first game he appeared in.
Yeah, which is pretty fun. I love that narrative as well of just like, maybe it's homoerotic. There is that kind of tension between Sonic and Knuckles.
Oh, yay.
Yeah, and because Knuckles evolves, right? There's like, in the same way that you get Dark Sonic, you have like a Dark Knuckles. Forgive me if I'm wrong. Listen, and I know that you know this about me, plot is not my strong point. Like, I'm pretty freewheeling with like narrative stuff. I'm kind of like, you know, all vibes. But I think that there is this gradual bringing in of Knuckles into like the gang of Sonic and Tails and Amy, and you know, they sort of Knuckles is just kind of doing his own thing, you know, he's got his little floating island. I think, you know, mainly looking for love, by which I mean looking for me. There's probably a lot of complex character evolution there that, honestly, I missed because I just wanted to cuddle him.
Oh, is he just like an innocent soul?
I think it's more that he's very, very lonely. He's got this crystals mission. I can't remember whether or not he is lured in by Dr. Robotnik, but I think it's more that like Knuckles feels he has to do everything by himself, and that is not true because the gang are there. I don't know. It's in a way, I think that if he was on the Dungeons and Dragons alignment, he'd be probably kind of a true neutral, you know, because I don't think he exists particularly to like go out and do good like Sonic or to like wreak chaos like Dr. Robotnik. He's got, you know, he's got to look after his little island. Like, can we all just, why is everyone else sticking their beak in? Like, just leave the guy alone.
What is this? Eggman swore to me that all he wanted was to live in peace.
He's sure tricky, isn't he?
That swindler, he lied.
from what you're describing, this sounds a lot like the Prince Zuko trajectory, which I am an absolute, ooh, I'm an absolute fool for.
Ooh, what is you that?
Have you not seen Avatar The Last Airbender, the cartoon, not the film? The film doesn't actually exist. Oh my goodness. Shan, you're going to love it.
Weekend, sorted.
I'm going to keep this into the edit because if anybody is horny for cartoons and has not yet watched the series of Avatar The Last Airbender or the sequel series Legend of Korra, seriously, get on it. So the Prince Zuko, I think he's certainly responsible for a lot of Gen Z crushes in general.
What an honour. That is the thing that you want as, like, the plate that will be put up on a building about you somewhere. The initiator of Gen Z crushes 2021 onwards.
Yeah, he goes from antagonist to ally. He has a very slow but very rewarding redemption arc.
Cool.
Yeah, it's really good. He is emotionally and physically damaged, and we all love some of that. Anyway, oh, yeah. I'm going to stop talking about Prince Zuko because he is not on the list.
Listen, I want to redeem that so hard, Gabby. Yeah. You won me around.
Anyway, I did have one Sonic game. I had Sonic Adventure on the Dreamcast, and Knuckles was my favourite to play because I really like he could float in that one. He was just sort of floating around, and I just not because with his knuckles you could climb up very high, and then you were literally just your knuckles missions were just floating around, waiting for your little radar to go ping that there was an emerald nearby. And it was just such a chill section of the game. I just really enjoyed just chilling out with Knuckles and just having a little float.
Yeah, plenty of time to think about what else those Knuckles could climb if given the opportunity.
So yeah, I do, I get it. My one question is, why is he never Australian?
This is an amazing question. I don't know. I think that is a big development flaw.
He should be Australian.
He definitely should. It's also, he is already legit surfing, right? Just doing it with upper body instead of a board. Also, I think the Australian-ness would fit in so well to that kind of narrative arc we were describing of, is he on the side of good or evil or just miscellaneous? Like, I love Australians. Shout out to Kelly, my friend who's Australian. Like, I love all you guys. But there is this real kind of, like, freeloader-ness about Australians. They do. They just kind of turn up and are like, well, I don't know, we'll just kind of go with whoever's having a good time, right? 100%. I wouldn't say New Zealand, although maybe, oh, I don't know. This is a whole other thing of, like, Knuckles' Antipodean identity.
Yeah. It would be nice to have, like, a very serious Antipodean as well, because they're often portrayed as being very sort of fun-loving and...
Yeah, absolutely. The kind of existentialist Australian. I mean, alternatively, Knuckles could be a French existentialist. I'm not going to say that that hasn't crossed my mind. Maybe, you know, it's not that he actually really cares about engaging with the fight for good or the fight for evil. He knows from his extensive readings of philosophy that none of it matters, ultimately. You might as well just guard your emeralds and hope for the best.
Buff. Right, well, that leads us very nicely into your second choice. Another person who isn't quite good or evil and probably feels like none of it really matters. So your second choice is a girl who is the epitome of Gen X 90s cynicism. The artsy shut-in's artsy shut-in. A vision in massive 90s boots with a hairdo you could cut yourself on. It's Jane Lane from Daria.
Oh, yeah. Well, I have a confession. I think that originally, like, while watching Daria, and also you were talking about the kind of Gen X 90s thing, I was watching this in Belgium, so we were probably about 5 years behind where everyone else was as well. But I do first remember, like, prickles of attraction for Trent, you know, Daria's boyfriend, who's Jane Lane's brother. But then it's all about Jane, because she's a queer character as well, right? She goes to uni and she gets she's obviously going off to art college. Everything about Jane Lane is art college. Jane's just cool. I think that a kind of constant thing about that show, right, is like, is Jane too cool to be friends with Daria? Or is Daria just super cool and we don't get it? Like, she's just such a vibe. I love her.
I think they're into a lot of the same things. They've got the same kind of mindset. See, I always thought Daria was cool. She just got big hair and glasses, you know. And I always thought Daria was really cool as well. And they're both into, this sort of counterculture. Not quite on the same page, because obviously Daria is less artsy than Jane is. But, you know, they get each other, which is nice.
My America. But where are the pinstripe jackal commerce, jaws adrip with commercial breaks, burying the rotting carcass of my beatific vision under the maggot-ridden piles of road rules reruns?
Who's hungry?
I saw the best minds of my generation destroyed by madness. Wait a minute. My generation has no best minds.
What about Christina Aguilera?
Oops. Spoke too soon.
I dig.
I guess it's also that thing of, like, sort of actively belonging to any scene would undo that fundamental thing of the friendship, which is that they're their own kind of little unit. And what's, like, the forever quote from Jane is like, hey, you want to eat pizza and complain, which is their whole friendship. It's beautiful. God, I just remembered as well, like, Daria, so many things about that show were so funny. Like, the whole relationship with Daria and her sister is just amazing. Like, Quinn, I just, like, there's that scene, right, where Quinn starts wearing black because she's like, this is what deep people wear. And she's like, really admires Daria, but is absolutely baffled about how someone can just be so disinterested in being liked. Like, it's so good. I forgot that, like, because the Morgendorfer family move into a house which used to have a psychiatric patient in it, right? So Daria lives in this padded room, which was their isolation cell. And she's like, no, yeah, this really fits. This really works.
Yeah. That's very Daria.
I guess also, like, the fun thing about Jane is it really, like, for me, it kind of hit on what I realised was a lot of kind of, God, you know, the gal pals thing of it's kind of like it's a romantic relationship with anything but, her and Daria have that intensely close female friendship, which is kind of a relationship, but they're not shagging, but they might, you know, like, it's kind of like it's sort of that thing of, like, people figuring out that level of platonic intimacy as well. And I guess, like, because Daria is straight but Jane is queer, Jane goes on to then, like, explore that by having same-sex relationships, for want of a less, like, old-fashioned way of saying that, queer relationships. But I just kind of remember, like, as a teenager in high school, there were so many kind of very close, like, femme-to-femme relationships where, like, I mean, it's funny, like, now I have a close friend who's one of those people, and we've now acknowledged that there was this, like, just, like, real sexual tension underneath it that we just didn't really know it was a thing, you know? We were just completely, like, in our own little bubble in the suburbs of Brussels. I'm not trying to say, like, oh yeah, what's cool about Jane Lane and Daria is that really they're a romantic couple, and that's what's interesting about it. That's not what I'm saying at all. I just think that kind of that, like, intensity of a female friendship and there being a kind of romance about it in and of itself was really cool. And it, like, absolutely replicates what a lot of my friendships are currently like. It's like, I feel like I'm in kind of various, like, close relationships, which are platonic, but, you know, they're like, they are a kind of partnered intimacy in a way. With the kind of anything but.
Yeah, I mean, they obviously love each other very much. I think there's also something about the fact that Daria's got a crush on Trent. I think that in one way that sort of makes the idea of her and Jane sort of being a couple sort of slightly more verboten. But in a way, it also kind of feels like, you know, you've got a massive crush on someone who shares, like, a ridiculous amount of DNA with this girl.
Yeah.
Is Trent just, like, the socially acceptable Jane?
It's true. And I guess it's also, like, because it sort of makes Daria, like, one of the Lane family in a way, but it's not that, because I feel like Daria and Trent and Jane, they're more like allies against the world than you know, chosen fam, like, because Daria's bio fam are so, like, straight-laced. Although, having said that, Helen Morgendorfer, also impossibly sexy, you know, the kind of like matriarch of that household. Just all, she's just like, she's always stressed and tired. And as we've discussed, that is invariably sexy. Oh my God. I think this is the Capricorns in us, Gabby. It's like, oh yeah, what's horny? A strong work ethic. Yep, delicious. You know the cartoon Big Mouth?
Yes.
Yeah, well, it's the whole, like, there's nothing new under the sun. I was just thinking about this morning, and everything that's good about Big Mouth, I think that the show, Daria, laid the foundations for. Mm. They're obviously, they're a bit younger in Big Mouth. They're, like, you know, 12 or 13, they're on the cusp of puberty. But I feel like the dynamics between the friendships are so similar. And, like, Daria has more of that kind of 90s nihilism, you know? Just that, like, cheerful doom. But I really felt like, I don't know, Daria is so important in terms of like how cartoons about those friendship groups exist, and everything that I think is recognizable in Big Mouth, I'm not saying it comes from Daria, but like so many things, like, you know, like in their high school there is a couple who are obviously the kind of horny couple who everyone's like, oh wow, they're like adults, like that's weird. And then the sort of like oddball goths being their own thing. I don't know, I feel like I love Big Mouth as a show so much. I think it's so funny, and also I just love that thing of pubescent teenagers talking like 35-year-olds, because that's how I felt. That's how I felt when I was a teenager. I was just kind of like, God, all these adults just getting in the way of my teen business. Like, I'm busy. I felt like I was, you know, a full-grown woman who was holding down a job, and it was like, no, you're just making it to history class. Like, this is crazy.
But, I love that Jay's fantasy is of being 40.
But teenagers are weird that way, I guess, you know? It's like the things that are appealing about adulthood are like, I mean, I used to, God, this is gonna make me sound so lame, I honestly just used to fantasize about getting locked in IKEA overnight, and I wouldn't do anything. Like, it wouldn't be like bouncing on the beds or anything. I would just kind of quietly float from setup to setup, being like, this could be my living room.
Ooh, I used to love IKEA this could be my living room. When I was a teenager.
Yeah, amazing. Oh man,
there was a big one in Nottingham near where I was growing up, and it was just like my absolute dream. Just sort of, yeah, as you say, just sort of wander around it going, oh, I could buy that for 50p.
Yeah,
shoe storage.
Yeah, completely. Oh, I love how this is where I could keep my DVDs within easy reach of the sofa. Just, a wild time was being had.
I still have my IKEA CD rack. in the kitchen.
Oh, that's like an antique now, basically, right?
Yeah, it totally is.
Can I tell you something?
CDs, yes.
Can I tell you something that like it does fall into the category of being like horny for things that we shouldn't be horny for? I love DVDs. I just DVDs are incredible. Why, you know, I love streaming services, but I just miss that like ritual of getting a DVD and being excited about the credit screen, thinking about all the little Easter eggs. Yes, I don't have like a DVD reader in my laptop at the moment, but I cannot bear to part with the DVDs on my shelf. Just beautiful things.
Speaking of things from the olden days. So let's go on to your and actually speaking of streaming, because this next character is my Netflix icon at the moment.
Yay! I'm so glad.
Yeah. Partially because they didn't have Magnus from Dark. they only had the main ones from Dark. It's like, well, if I'm not having Magnus, then I'll go on to get this one instead. So your third choice is a career lady, a mom, and the reason why I stopped calling BoJack the Sad Horse Show and started calling it the Sad Cat Show. She's complex. She's pink. She's an anthropomorphic female with a heart of gold and a shitty client list. It's Princess Carolyn off of BoJack Horseman.
Yes. Oh, God. I really love her. There's so much to say. Oh, I'm so glad. Like, I feel, as you said, it's Princess Carolyn's show, you know? And
she is the most likable. And the most complex. Well, I suppose Todd and Diane are very likable. But she is the one who combines complex character and likability like the most, I feel. I love her so much. She's got so many layers to her. Amy Sedaris is an amazing, and it's nice to see Amy Sedaris being given like a meaty, emotional role to play, because she's such a good clown. She's an amazing clown. She's hilarious, but it's really nice to see her getting to play someone who's sad.
Yeah, 100%. And oh my God, like that show made me realize how like good voice acting is, like nothing else. As you said, like Amy Sedaris, just the level of complexity that happens in that character. Mm. Yeah, I think that also, I mean, so Princess Carolyn has a dynamic that I see so much in like femmes, but not exclusively. But it's that thing of she needs to be needed and creates all these circumstances where she is, I don't want to say primary caregiver exactly, but she puts herself in a role where she has to look after other people at the expense of her own needs, and then comes to resent it, but then keeps doing it over and over again.
Of course. That's what you get when you fall for a horse. Taxi! You gotta get your shit together. So yesterday you let yourself fall in love a little bit and you got your heart broken. Serves you right for having feelings. Starting now, you are a hard, heartless career gal. Go to work, be awesome at it, and don't waste time on foolish flights of fancy. From now on, you are a robot. Beep, bop, boop, bloop, bleep.
As you said, like, just what's fascinating about her is, because she came from nothing, is the plotline, right? She
really... poverty.
Yeah, completely. So for her, even being anywhere near LA and this aspirational life, is she's like, I've been a success by being here. But it's that conflict in her head of like genuinely wanting to do good and then being trapped by all of this like crap. God, there's just so much I like about her. The problematic thing, Gabby, if I'm honest with you, is like, with Princess Carolyn, who, God, I just want to couple up with her, but I kind of want to be her terrible boyfriend. Does that make sense? Because she's got a real strategic side as well, right?
Yeah, like, she's an agent, so she has to be.
Yeah, absolutely. And even with this terrible client list, like the way that she will like maneuver to get them is just kind of astonishing. But I think there is that thing of everybody knows that at the end of the day, Princess Carolyn will just pick up the pieces of everyone else's disaster because it's just in her nature if she cannot leave things hanging. And it is that terribly gendered thing of like, oh, she's kind of the world's wife, you know? Like there's all these huge egos like crashing around her, and she has her own thing going on, but like, you know, ultimately just kind of knows that she will sort it out in the end, like no matter how impossible other people create it, which like, again, the reason I said it's like a terrible part of me is like, can you imagine? Like, that's just, it's the perfect person to be partnered up with, you know, like the person who is going to make everything okay, no matter how much you like crash around and fuck shit up, like, you know, the absolute perfect fallback partner. I also think that something that is really interesting about her, and yeah, as you said, it's kind of very beautifully drawn out, is that from the beginning, she's very maternal and, you know, wanting to have a child, like wanting to, be in a relationship with someone she's co-parenting. That is like present all the way through. And I just think it's really cool to have that done so honestly and like in a way that's well researched in a cartoon, and also with a character who is like weird and ambitious and kind of strange in her own way as well. I remember like... So it was a few, is it months or is it weeks? I don't know. What is time? It's 2021. It's just kind of like, it's just kind of custard time and space. But, when Halsey, the musician, had a baby, Amanda Palmer did a post on Facebook, but directing it to her Patreon. Amanda Palmer was writing about how she had felt a lot of pressure as a female musician to kind of like hide her reproductive self away from that because of being in a world where you're expected to compete with complete because of being in a world where you're expected to compete with men. But actually since Amanda Palmer became a parent, her songwriting has just skyrocketed in quality, like just the kind of like depth and understanding that she has. She's also very careful, like, you know, she's not doing any kind of like, you know, shaming of people who don't have children for this, but she just kind of came at it with that honesty of like the desire to be a parent is something that we are sidelined for because of patriarchy, but it's missing out on such a richness of experience and just like depth and complexity to a person. And I love that Princess Carolyn has that really overtly, that, you know, there's just this kind of, and also because especially early on in the series with BoJack, I think like you can feel in this character the real fear that it might never happen for her, that it's like, oh my God, I might never actually get to have children. So Gabby, this is what I'm telling you. What is attractive about her is she's fearful and codependent, and I'm so horny for that. Oh, and also that she occupies a massively abused set of like very gendered labor characteristics, which part of me just wants to take full advantage of. There we go, I've said it.
But by the end of it, she ends up with somebody who is there to pick up her shit. She ends
and it's
up
not
with
me. The injustice. Can't stand it.
She ends up with Peter, who he's the hottest guy on the show. He's like stupid hot. And he's absolutely, in my opinion, he is absolutely the right partner for her. He is utterly devoted to her.
I strive for precision. My aim is to be accurate and clear. I don't say things I don't know to be true. So believe me when I tell you I love you. I don't write good love songs. I'm not adept with metaphors or rhymes. I just want to describe the things I know. And the only thing I know is that I love you. Please believe me when I tell you I love you, Princess Carolyn.
He's her Princess Carolyn, if that makes sense. Yeah. So while she's like running around sorting out the shit of all these kind of toxic, self-obsessed characters, he is sort of quietly supportive, and he's there to make sure that her spreadsheets are nice and neat, make sure that her itinerary is manageable. I really like them getting together at the end of it, I have to admit. And she does become a parent in the end. She becomes a wonderful adoptive initially a single adoptive mother. She then gets married in the last episode, and they become co-parents, I'm assuming. But she, you know, she has help from the TARD as well.
Yeah, I mean, that series would have been unbearable if it didn't somehow work out for Princess Carolyn, right? Like, I mean, yeah, I fully agree with you. I'm just saying, it could have been me, I fully agree.
Yeah, the episode where she finds out her necklace is fake is just fucking heartbreaking.
Oh, God, I know! God, there are so... weirdly, I only got into BoJack this year. Like, I kind of seen bits of it, you know? Yeah. And one of my closest friends, Emily, who's a cartoonist, really loved BoJack, partly because the writing is just, like, astonishing. Really, but also, good. Yeah, it's amazing. But it's so beautifully integrated with the artwork as well. Mm, and it's Lisa Hallway or Lisa Haldway, the artist.
Yes.
The kind of visual storytelling and the verbal and scripted storytelling absolutely meshed together. So, like, Emily was a super fan. I think this is such a boring, like, you know, knee-jerk third-wave feminist reaction. I think I resisted BoJack for so long because I was like, I don't want to watch another story about a drunk man. Like, oh, what, really?
Drunk, rich, toxic man.
Exactly. Wait, hang on. There's a man who's really entitled and gets to do whatever he wants. Wow, yeah, this sounds radical and groundbreaking. So I was like, nah, fuck that. But I completely agree with what you were saying of, like, really it's Princess Carolyn's story, I think. And, like, Diane. And, I mean, okay, it's an ensemble show, but, like, I think... yeah, God, Princess Carolyn is the absolute beating heart of that show. And yeah, but
heart.
I think
she's the,
yeah.
she's she's the warmth of, well, her and Todd, I think, are kind of they're the beloved characters, aren't they? They're the
They've written characters who so fully express needs and desired that are not treasured by patriarchal capitalism, like the kind of the compulsion to nurture things, and also the kind of almost self-sabotaging compulsion to put other people's needs in front of yours and then be like, why do I do this? And resenting it, but then just kind of not being able to, you know, it's just kind of, it's such a really, I think, very recognizable mix of traits. And it's just really cool that exists then beyond, then, you know, in the same universe as the big, the A-listers crashing around with their various substance abuse disorders. You've got these very real people, even if she's a pink cat.
Well, I've got one more question for you, and that is, if I were to get out a magic wand and say that I could bring any one of your three into the real world and make them real and three-dimensional, and which one would it be? And would you try to pursue them if they were in the real world?
Gabby, what a curveball of a question! How can I choose? Let's go for Knuckles, because I want to fly to a floating island. Also, now I need to know whether he has an Australian accent. You've seeded that now. I can't let it go. I guess the thing is, like, I feel like I've met Jane so many times. And I feel like, God, I absolutely have met Princess Carolyn, like, just, oh God, absolutely. I mean, you know, we both work in the entertainment industry, right? Like,
so yes, there's a lot of Princess Carolyn's in
absolutely. I feel like if I was going to use this magic wand, definitely go for the, you know, go
magic
for summoning the
echidna.
Magic flying echidna. possibly genderqueer flying echidna. It's kind of a bit ambiguous, and also I want to find out whether it's white people dreads. That's my big curiosity.
Well, brilliant. I shall give that a zap and bring a magic floating echidna of unknown gender into the real world. Shan, thank you so much. Is there anything you'd like to plug?
Thank you so much for having me on the show. You can find me on Instagram, is where I mainly inhabit at the moment. I'm Shandoxy on Instagram. That's usually where I have updates about my shows. Oh, I would love people to join my mailing list. I send almost like oversharey letters, which has all my info about projects, gigs and stuff. And also, I have a podcast about pole dancing. It's called Pole the Other One, and it talks to people from all across the wonderful pole dancing community about pole, which, because pole is a life's rich tapestry of everything, it's also a podcast about business, mental health, gender, self-worth, identity. Irish Celtic shamanism is something that came up in an episode. I would love people to listen to the podcast. Whether or not you're a pole dancer, there's something for everyone.
Thank you so much, Shan.
Thank you, Gabby.
Huge thanks to Shandoxy there. I'm Gabby Hutchinson Crouch. For more credits and details, see @curiously_drawn on Twitter.